It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, conversations with two writers who are visiting Iowa this week to speak. Later in the hour, salon culture and politics columnist Thomas Frank with reflections on a question he poses. He'll be posing at an event in Iowa. What's the matter with liberals? But first, Batcha Posh is a term literally meaning dressed up as a boy. It's a practice in parts of Afghanistan in which some families without sons will pick a daughter to dress and behave, to live temporarily as a boy. Investigative reporter Jenny Nordberg broke the story of Batcha Posh to the New York Times in 2010. And then in 2014, she came out with a book about it titled The Underground Girls of Kabul. Nordberg is a New York-based foreign correspondent and a columnist for the Swedish national newspaper Svenska Dagbladet, and she will be speaking at Iowa State University this week, Thursday, February 5th at 8 p.m. at the Memorial Union as part of the Lecture World Affairs series Redefining Global Security. She joins us live this half hour from New York City. Jenny Nordberg, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give us an overview of this practice for those of us not familiar with it, and that's just about everybody. Under what circumstances is this done and why?
Well, Batcha Posh, as you said very well, literally means dressed up like a boy in Dari, which is one of Afghanistan's official languages. And this is a practice, it's almost like a third gender. A family will have a daughter, a son, or a Batcha Posh. This is a deeply patriarchal, conservative culture where sons, that's the thing that counts. You need to have a son to protect the family, to have someone to bring an income, to take care of parents at an old age, and also to project power and status of the family. Like, men are the only thing that counts. So for parents who don't have a son, let's say they have a string of girls, only daughters, for instance, who will be married off at puberty most often, that family is not only perceived as weak, it is in fact weak in this very harsh, very poor and segregated society where men have most of the rights and can leave the house and work and all those things. So what is not unusual for families to do is to simply cut off the hair of a daughter and put her in a pair of pants and send her out the door and into the world, representing the family's honor in the form of a son. Mm-hmm. So it's a made-up son, and most families, I've been told, who don't have a daughter will consider this as an option for, you know, anything from survival to support the family to also raising the family status.
Now, is the gender of the child known or supposed to be known to anyone outside the family, or is it a family secret?
It's both. It's a family secret, but it's also something that I describe as don't ask, don't tell in Afghan society. This is a well-known practice. Every Afghan that I've spoken to in my 5 years of research in and out of Afghanistan will know someone. They'll be like, yeah, I have a cousin, someone in my extended family. It's been going on for hundreds of years. So Afghans are well aware of it. They, you know, each Afghan may not choose this for their own family. But at the same time, it's a largely accepted practice for when it comes to children. That's considered something that's up to the parents to basically decide how they're portrayed in the world. So the way to describe it is also like, you know, it's not really meant to fool anyone, but it's an invisibility cloak for girls and for young women so that they can move around and they won't be harassed. And it might be a way for a young girl, for instance, to get an education if the road to school is too treacherous and she will be left alone if she's disguised as a boy. So you could say that being creative more than anything else in an impossible society. And by that, most Afghans also accept this. And even though they may discover that someone is in fact a girl, it doesn't matter much as long as it comes to children.
Mm-hmm. We might do well to remind us in Afghan society, women wanting to go to school could face quite a danger, right?
Yes, that's true. I mean, during the Taliban, there were very few, if any at all, girls in school at all. And then that's changed in the last 13 years with the U.S. and international presence there. But old traditions remain. It's a very conservative society. Many people think that girls should not get an education. And, you know, you've seen this with Malala next door in Pakistan and the culture there. It's very much the same in Afghanistan. It's considered dangerous for girls to get an education, not only for themselves because their brains are too weak to handle it, according to many, but also because they might, you know, they might get opinions about things and ask for rights that they're not supposed to have. So it's something very controversial in a patriarchal culture like this.
Mm-hmm. How is the child in the family, let's say there are three or four children, how is the child then selected and at what age? Do parents, for instance, take into consideration from the interviews that you've done, did you think that parents took into consideration whether a child was particularly masculine or feminine in behavior?
Well, many times this could be done from birth, and then you really have no idea. So it's a fascinating study of nature versus nurture, because a child would then, a female child will be brought up entirely like a boy, let out to play, you know, dressed in male clothing and boys' clothing, hanging out mostly with boys and men. And since society is still segregated, as a boy, you won't really know, even, and a young man, what goes on the other side, what women and girls are up to. So you're entirely socialized in a male environment. And so I would say that these children, according to my research, they're picked at random. I mean, when the families become desperate enough and the need for a boy becomes so strong, they'll just pick usually the youngest child because that will last them the longest as a boy in the family, in the son.
Mm-hmm. What happens during puberty? Because I think many would be thinking, okay, you arrive up until puberty, it's one problem, one challenge. But when you get to puberty, it's another sort of challenge with breast development and so forth, and going to bathroom facilities at a school, for instance.
Yes, excellent question. And this is when the story gets really complicated. For most girls, this is a charade that will go on until just before puberty. When you enter puberty as a girl, as a young woman in Afghanistan, that's when the curtain inevitably comes down on you, specifically when the first menstruation for a girl appears. That's when she's supposed to fold into this culture of purity, to become a virgin wife of someone of her parents' choice. And then it becomes very important to shelter that girl. And being a boy is no longer on the table. So she will then be switched back, so to speak, to a gender that she's never known. I've interviewed adult women who led their lives as boys and up until young men into puberty. And then one day a parent will come home with a dress and a headscarf and say, this is your time to become a woman. That's what happens in most cases. And there's no choice really for these bunch of push girls. You don't go against your parents and there's really nowhere to go. There are a few girls that I've met, and this is more rare, who are able to resist their parents longer because as one 15-year-old said to me, I see how women are treated here. Why would I want to be one of them?
Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit more, Jenny, about how this is accepted in fundamentalist Muslim culture, for instance, what the Taliban think of this, how it is built into at least our notion of what it means to be a fundamentalist Muslim.
Well, this has nothing really to do with religion. There's nothing. I mean, I tried to investigate all these different paths. I was like, does this have to do with religion? Is it an ethnic thing? Is a certain geography, parts of Afghanistan? Is it does it have to do with, you know, language or level of education, poor or rich families? Well, it turns out that this happens in all of these families. The only thing that binds them together is the acute need for a son. But there's no religious decree or there's no law to say that you can't do this. It's very much accepted based on the fact, again, that this is children and you don't get involved in other people's business. Society doesn't really have any demands on children. So in a way, in a sort of backwards, you know, ironic kind of way, they're more liberal about children than how they can look than we are, perhaps, you know, putting our girls in pink and our boys in blue, and that's very important to us. Afghans don't see it that way, and children don't have the same rights. When children become older comes into puberty, that's when the segregation really comes into effect. So then it becomes very important. As for the Taliban, and I interviewed Taliban spokespeople about this, this is a practice that was banned under the Taliban because then they take an even more conservative view on this, and they think that it's this is a distorted view, of course, of Islam and religion in general. They came down hard on this, and they very much intend to ban this and go after this practice once they, as they fully expect, come back into power. So they take a very harsh stand on this, but you know, they're currently not in power, at least not in all of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, my guest this half hour is investigative reporter Jenny Nordberg, talking about the Afghan practice of bacha push. This is a term that she described as literally meaning dressed up as a boy, practiced in parts of Afghanistan, which some families without sons will pick a daughter to dress and behave and live temporarily until puberty, the onset of puberty as a boy. The Underground Girls of Kabul is the title of the book she's written about this topic. Now, this is really interesting in that you can think about it one way, that it's a subversive act, Jenny, can't you? Because you're changing some strict gender roles in this culture. But also, you can think about it as reinforcing segregation of the sexes. How do you see it?
Well, both. Basically, I came into this story as a human trait, thinking, is this good or bad? Is it something that promotes freedom and resistance, or is it at its essence something tragic that just enhances the ruling order of men and the patriarchy? And, you know, it's both. It depends on the individual stories. I've spoken to women who've said, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to live on the other side for a few years, because now I know that I'm not worth less than a man. I can do everything that they can do, and my mind is fully functioning, and I can accomplish things. So it was an empowering experience to many women, and those are usually the women who spent a few years as bacha push, when they were children. I've also spoken to women who said, I wish my parents had never done this to me, because the transition back to becoming a woman and living as a woman in Afghanistan was much too hard, and that broke me, and I will never get over it. I feel like I'm stuck in between. I'm two different people. So it has, you know, it has had different effects on different people, and you can certainly see it both as having an element of resistance to it, and also confession through the ruling order, and something very, very tragic. I mean, at the core, again, this is about what humans do to survive and to buck the system in an impossible society. It speaks more to that, I think.
Is there an indication of the long-term consequences of this? If, for instance, bacha push would later in life, with a female identity, be more emancipated, generally speaking?
Well, there are certainly examples of those women, women who have become politicians, ministers for provinces, gone on to study at universities. But yes, again, you know, it's had very sad and tragic and very psychologically harsh impact on other women as well. I mean, my dream and fantasy would be for them to also, perhaps as a first step, to know more about each other. I've had heartbreaking conversations with quite a few women who have said, you know, I've told you this story, and I've never talked to anyone about this before. And my question back to you, Jenny, is, are there others like me And I've said yes. I've met many by now, and they said, "Where are they? You know, can I talk to them? Can I meet them? Because I feel so alone in this experience."
They're segregated from each other, even in a neighborhood. They wouldn't know who the other Bacha Push were.
Yeah, many times a few times there have been those who, you know, bound together, but often I've spoken to a woman who's had this experience, who's in it or who has been in it, and they think that this is their unique experience, which it is, but that they're entirely alone and that this makes them strange. You can draw parallels to many other scenarios in history where you know, like the gay or lesbian movement, or where people have thought of themselves as outcasts until they found that there were others like them. And there's a strength in that, and there's a force in that. My dream would be that in the future they would learn more about each other as well, because I think that could be very helpful and also interesting for the future, because there's enormous power in some of these women.
Jenny Nordberg is the author of The Underground Girls of Kabul. Now, since the U.S. Entry into Afghanistan back in 2001, Jenny, we've heard a lot about the idea of saving Afghan women. It's used by politicians, spoken of in the media, as an extra justification for the war. There have been images of women brutalized by the Taliban, for instance. And so this is an idea that was argued as a byproduct of the international involvement, a good byproduct, that it would be a safer world for women in this war-torn country. How much is different in Afghanistan now than it was in the early 2000s? Has much changed?
No. Yes. A lot has changed in the sense that there's not Taliban rule anymore. Certainly many more women and children in general have been able to get an education. There's been significant progress on an individual level for many people, with huge efforts, again, individually by others. If you ask whether the project of, you know, turning Afghanistan into a secular Western style democracy, which was the idea and ambition at one point, no, that has not happened. Same thing about saving Afghan women, which was also a rationale for the war many times. And it was a long war, and who knows what's going to happen now, you know, 13 years later, with one of the biggest foreign aid efforts of our time. No, things have not changed significantly for the majority of Afghan women. And this is not my opinion or observation. This is what the human rights organizations who are on the ground in the country speak about. They say specifically that progress is modest and easily reversible. And it's also mainly concentrated to the urban areas where women have had more opportunity. But when you look at the rural parts of Afghanistan, life is very much the same for women. And again, extremely oppressive, as it's been for you know, hundreds of years. So Taliban or no Taliban, traditions are followed many times in the same way. And you also see a resurgence now of warlords and insecurity. The people I speak to in Kabul, and I spoke to one of my main characters just a few days ago, they're afraid, especially women, and especially these women who have had opportunities in the past decade. They're very scared of what's happening right now.
You have developed a website in connection with this called bachaposh.com, bachaposh.com, as I understand, an online resource for girls who have grown up as boys due to this segregation. What have you achieved there? What's the most interesting feedback you've received through that website?
Well, that is it's still in its infancy, but it's the idea was for me, and is for me, since this was something that was entirely unknown to a Western audience, at least, even though Afghans were very well aware of it. It hadn't been written about. And I tried to collect and share the research that I had done with the purpose of also, like I mentioned before, having more women and girls sharing their own experience and not having me speak for them, to so to say, and maybe collect their stories, but hopefully that they will also share stories with each other, and that this is a forum for research about this, because it's not something exotic that goes on in Afghanistan, first of all. It's something that's global. It's happening right now in Pakistan, in India, all over the Gulf countries. Wherever there's segregation, girls and women will use this. They will give up on their own gender and try to be something else in order to survive under that system. And it's also something that we, I think, as Westerners and Western women and men, can very much relate to, or should relate to, in our own history. Women have always done this. Some women have always tried to pose as men in order to get an education, to escape forced marriages, to even get out of the house. And, you know, quite frankly, I've many times tried to be one of the boys, so to speak, maybe not in a literal sense, but to remove some of the feminine in order to be taken seriously and to be able to do what I need to do in my profession as a journalist and as a correspondent. So I think it's a universal theme of oppression and something that we need to keep talking about. And that's what I try to do with Bacha Push and we'll try to do in the future, hopefully.
We have just over a minute left. I wonder what you think of the future of this practice. Will it go away? How has the exposure to the wider world impacted the practice, if at all?
I think it has nothing to do with exposure. We can look at our own history to see that this is something that women did in the Middle Ages, for instance, in Europe. And once things started to change for women and globally, there's no need for this anymore. I mean, you'll see traces of it even in our own society today. But as we have seen with people who have been discriminated on the basis of their ethnicity, religion, you know, sexual orientation, once you list that, there's no need to pretend to be of the other and someone else anymore. And that's what we strive toward. We're nowhere near that in countries like Afghanistan today, unfortunately.
Okay.
So this will keep happening.
A fascinating topic and research you've done. Investigative reporter Jenny Nordberg, author of The Underground Girls of Kabul. She'll be speaking at Iowa State University this Thursday, the 5th, at 8 p.m. at the Memorial Union, if you'd like to meet her. It's a lecture that's part of the World Affairs series, Redefining Global Security. Jenny Nordberg, what a pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up in just a moment, another conversation with a visiting writer to Iowa, Salon columnist, political and culture columnist Thomas Frank. He asks and answers the question he'll be posing to Iowans when he comes this week: what's the matter with liberals? You can hear his observations about that when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.